The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end? And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there. I will see you.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to the Friday, August the 10th, 2012 edition of the new WHFR Journal. That's right, from WHFR.fm, the station making waves. This is where we talk about local news. So local, sometimes it hurts. More local than any other station does local news. And that's because, well, our signal goes out 6 to 8 miles, and that's we don't think it's too fair to talk about stuff that goes on beyond that. So, local news and alternative views. Yeah, because we, here on the station, we try to play music that the other stations in the Detroit area are not playing. And so, on this show, yes, we do try to also feature ideas that might be new, fresh, different, challenging, other perspectives on the world than what you hear in the mainstream, or sometimes referred to as lamestream media. During the show, I'm sorry to say we can't pick up the phone, but I'm going to have my news director, Kevin, see who's on the line right now in the background. First of all, of course, this was primary election week this last Tuesday. And, of course, the results, if you haven't already heard or gone to cityofdearborn.org, it is really... Here, Kevin, right in there. Okay. We're not going to answer the phone, folks, during the show, because we're just too darn busy here talking about this. And I know you're on the edge of your seat. Well, local winners for big races, of course, John Dingell has been nominated as the Democratic candidate to return, if he's elected, to his office in Washington, D.C. for the 30th time. 2 years each term, that means he will be there 60 years or have the potential of completing 60 years if he's reelected in November to the 15th district. George Duraney and it was unopposed, and so he will be up against Priscilla Parnes, she was unopposed on the Republican side for our Michigan House Rep, that district covers most of Dearborn. So there wasn't really any contest there. Dave Kinesic, who was interviewed on the Dearborn Heights News and Views show on this station on the fifth Tuesday, which was the 31st of July, So look for Tuesday Forum on our website. Talk shows, Tuesday Forum, and you can listen to that. Kind of interesting. Dave was the only person that, after we invited all four Democrats and the Republican running for 11th District Michigan House, who actually showed up in the studio. So four of those five promised to be here, and only Dave actually made it in person. One other Democrat called it in at the last second. Republican couldn't make it, one of the other Democrats who lost, I won't even mention his name, just didn't call and didn't show up. So that's not very responsible for somebody who's running for office. Anyway, Dave Kinesic, a former student council president over at U of MD, and just graduated this last year, 6 years a Marine, 3 years in the reserve, and he is going to be the Democratic nominee over there on the ballot against whoever the Republican is going to be, who was uncontested. That was a Republican who didn't show up here. Diane Webb, a Wayne County council person from the Dearborn Heights area, which I think also includes Garden City and other places out there, she had a tough race in the Democratic side, or I guess it could have been, because Bob Conson, who was term limited out of being a representative to the Michigan House from that 11th district that Dave Kinesic is going to be running in, Bob Conson decided to run against her. That's right, two big-time Democratic Party names running against each other. I think Diane Webb has been in that Wayne County Commission office for at least a couple of terms. But, of course, Conson, because he was also on Dearborn Heights City Council, maybe he thought he had more voter name recognition overall. And we interviewed him on the Dearborn Heights News and Views for a whole hour a couple months ago as he was deciding to run for Wayne County Commission. We asked him about his goals and purposes and so on. Well, Diane Webb soundly beat him. And say soundly means something, I think, 60-40 or better. And so Diane Webb, incumbent Wayne County Commissioner in the Dearborn Heights, Garden City area out there in that area. I don't know if they call them a district or whatever for the commission, but she is going to be running up against some Republican. Cynthia Colgren, and here's a cautionary tale for those of you who are listening to the Journal but did not vote. And I know there must be some of you because the percent of voters is only 25% of registered voters. And, of course, how many people are not registered? Oh, about another, I understand, 50%. That's right. Only about a little over half of the people who could be registered to vote are registered. And only a fourth of them actually voted in the Dearborn area, at least in the city of Dearborn. And I'm happy. 25% is more than typical for an August primary race, which is often only about 16 to 18% turnout. But even 25% is pathetic, because when you look at the total number of people who could vote, that's actually only about one-eighth. Only about one person in eight voted. And, of course, only one-sixteenth, or slightly better, maybe one-twelfth of the possible voters in this area decided the outcome, because like 60% of the people who could vote, they made that decision. Talk about power. We're getting back to the Cynthia Colgren and Karen Jacobson race. Now, they're going to be the winner. Cynthia Colgren is going to be the competition for John Dingell in November. And that's going to be a tough battle, certainly, because John Dingell, big name recognition, a lot of power in Congress. In fact, I've even spoken to some Republicans in this area. Let's say, well, we don't want to lose that chairmanship. The power of Congress and the House of Representatives is to have that seniority, and that'll give you the heads of different committees, and you can rule things up and down. And so there is a lot of power for a legislator who's been there for a lot of years, if he chooses to use it in a wise way, of course. And so it's interesting to me that I even, personally know some people who are Republican upside down and backwards, and I know Al Foster will disagree, the Republican editorial opinion writer for the Press and Guide, but certainly, it is one criteria. You know, do you want someone elected who is not only going to represent you, but have, let's say, a little more power than the average representative because they can be a chair of a powerful committee? And, of course, not just any committee, but the biggest committees. And so Dingell has that seniority, and he has been chair of powerful committees, and so he can actually have a little bit more power, or a lot more power, if you want to look at it that way, than the average representative in the House who might be a newbie. Okay? But Cynthia Colgren lost badly to Karen Jacobson in Dearborn only, which is only part of the district. Something like 5-1 in favor of Karen Jacobson. And Cynthia Colgren came by Dearborn Homecoming on Sunday, and I talked to her, and she said, well, I'm really worried because Karen Jacobson, apparently, you know, transparency and campaign financing, she spent 12 times more money on her campaign than I was able to spend on mine. Well, folks, that normally would make the difference, and it certainly did in Dearborn. So I'm guessing that maybe Karen Jacobson thought she'll just spend all the money on Dearborn voters, because it might be the lion's share of voters here, certainly in this part, but the district goes all the way from Ann Arbor down to Trenton. And so out of that whole big area, Cynthia Colgren won 16,600-some votes to 16,300 votes. So 300 votes made the difference, or, if you will, 151 votes one way or the other. So if 151 people didn't vote for her, who did, I mean, if they changed their vote and decided to vote for Karen Jacobson, she would have won the district by a couple of votes. So, and this is always true in every election, but especially in elections like a primary where not many people vote, a few votes make a big difference, can give you a lot of power to get what you want or who you want into office. It was an unbelievable campaign that was spending so little money, but maybe she knocked on a lot of doors, whatever. She actually beat Karen Jacobson, who did a lot of emails and did a lot of tweeting, I know, and had a fancier website than Cynthia Colgren. Maybe it was just the one-to-one contact. We interviewed both of them here on the Dearborn Journal, the WHFR Journal, give a chance for both of them to talk about how they're different from each other. And maybe that made the difference to some people. Who knows? The WHFR bump. In fact, a majority of these winners were right here on this show or the Dearborn Heights News and Views show. So WHFR bump, that's what we call it, folks. We're not saying it's hilarious that it made the big difference, but it's got to mean something. Every bit of free campaign opportunity to talk to the people out there that might vote certainly doesn't hurt. So we're happy to do that. And we're not saying that challengers always are the best thing or third-party candidates. We're just saying if you don't hear about them anywhere else, maybe you should listen to them here or try to find out about them some other way, because maybe you actually will like them better and will decide to vote for them. And maybe they are, in fact, going to be a better choice for office. You don't know unless you find out first. You know, and then you... Right now, you know what you don't know, and then you'll know what you didn't know before, and then better able to be able to vote. Judge, 19th District Court Judge Sam Salami won big time. Now, you can only vote for one out of three, but the top two, in fact, will go on till to November to fight it out for the 19th District Judgeship. So Sam Salami, who's not the incumbent, Richard Wigonik is the incumbent, he got a tremendous number of votes, I don't know, two or three times more than Richard Wigonik. But, of course, the top two are going to go to November to battle it out. So Candace Abbott is out of the race for 19th District Judge. This was the second time that she had a major run with a lot of campaign posters and flyers and did not get her on this show, but... So she didn't get the bump. But we didn't have Wigonik or Salami on the show either, so we didn't do it, folks, one way or the other. I did see at my polls a campaign worker for Sam Salami, and a nice young lady who was just, you know, standing far enough away in the parking lot and handing out information. I think it was a nail file in the shape, two-dimensional shape, of a judge's gavel. And I said, I don't need one. I'm a guy, you know. But, and, you know, I just think whatever Candace Abbott's arguments were, they didn't take hold, you know. And we've gone over some charges she made against Salami, which actually might have incensed certain of his supporters and other people in the community, because some of the charges she made about, you know, names on his petition being fraudulent were found to be totally untrue. And so that can sort of raise the ire of the people on the other side, you know, and they're going to, you know, work even harder for their candidate if they felt the person has been maligned, you know. So maybe that negative campaigning did backfire. Now, of course, it's totally fine, totally legal. If you think there was voter fraud, tell the state to investigate. But Candace Abbott never indicated where she got the information that there was fraud. So it looked like just one of those delaying tactics or negative campaigning moves to make the other candidate look like they're doing something wrong. But he was totally vindicated in terms of his campaign signatures. So I think that's the story. I have in the studio Kevin Bruff, our WHFR news director, and Joe Sullivan. I assume both of you voted. Don't have to tell me if you didn't, because I don't want to have to berate you over the air. But any comments from either one of you about the campaign? Oh, yes. Kevin knows that I don't always have his mic turned up, so he was pantomiming. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything to report. It was
talking to you?
It was pretty slow. I couldn't believe the really low turnout where I was. Hardly anybody seemed to be coming by, but okay. I'm not in this district around here, so Joe?
What was the turnout again for Dearborn?
The total was 25% of the registered voters.
That's about normal for a primary, I think.
No, as I just said earlier, about 16 to 18% for a primary in August. Although this is an election year primary, yeah, right. Once every 4 years, it's a bigger election year, might be slightly more. Oh, I didn't mention, but the DIA millage passed.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Although it had a big margin of passage in Wayne and Oakland counties and just barely passed in Macomb. Maybe because Macomb is further away from the DIA and they may not get down as much to use their free admission. But yes, folks, I got to tell you, free admission. Just prove somehow that you or your family, at least at your address, live in Wayne, Oakland, or Macomb County, and you can get in free the DIA anytime that they're open. And they're going to be expanding their hours. We talked to Pamela Marcel on the Journal show last week. It's going to be very exciting. They have stable funding now. Thank you for the yes vote. Thank you for taxpayers of Wayne, Oakland, Macomb County for the next 10 years. And so that's a tremendous cultural institution. I hate to think it's going to be the only one left in Detroit, but the only one that can operate that has funding is a high world-class art museum, and everything else, transportation, government, schools, is all falling to pieces. I hope that's not the case. I hope there's answers there somewhere.
But King Tut's going to be safe inside the DIA.
He hasn't been there for a few years, but yes. Yeah. But no, they have great collection of Rembrandt. They just finished one exhibit, and they'll be bringing more of their warehoused work out, rotating it, of course, more. And they've got beautiful facilities, and they were a big upgrade thanks to particularly generous donors for the last 10, 15 years who gave money over that period to complete these major renovations, too. So now they can actually keep the doors open, and it's free admission. Now, if you're not from Wayne, Oakland, Macomb County, you got some friends coming down from Lansing, they'll have to pay. And only rightly so, right? Because you're paying that $23 a year on average household, and it gives all of you and your family. You got to have some sort of ID to sort of prove that you live at an address. But I think like one adult saying, "These are my kids," you know, you can all get in free.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. Children,
they're going to be relatively generous, especially
kids
at the beginning here. And they're going to continue all the free admission to kids for school bus tours, because the schools are in these three areas. And so it's just wonderful that we decided to preserve that. I wish we could also do millages to preserve. I understand the Detroit Science Center is closed. That's what people tell me, although I thought it was still struggling. That's terrible. I know that it must be different funding, that the Belle Isle Aquarium and the Great Lakes Museum are still open. They might have separate funding sources.
Well, right? Last I heard, the Belle Isle Aquarium was closed, and they were getting ready to reopen it, and they had that reopening party, and then it got vandalized, like right around the time of the Grand Prix on Belle Isle.
Hope they'll snap back to that. And of course, they have a little botanical garden that's still open.
Oh, yeah, that place is beautiful. For anybody that's never seen it, you're missing.
They have it specially fixed up at Holidays, but that's right next to. It's in the same building complex as the aquarium, which really needed upgrading and updating. Too bad that all of the great nonprofit cultural institutions couldn't have been part of that same millage request. It was about 3 or 4 years ago, 4 years ago maybe, and that went down to defeat. But that would have been like more than $100 average increase per average household.
But that funded all the
all the major art, science, cultural institutions that we know and love. And so I feel a little bit sorry for the rest of them that only the DIA made it this time. Because to have another millage next year for the, I don't know, the Science Center or something, that's going to be sad. Now, Henry Ford Museum luckily has a lot of benefactors, and they have a lot of tourists, a lot of income from people coming by. And they probably can hold their own without it, but to have a secure base level of funding is a wonderful thing for any institution. And they can plan from years to years, and they can economize and plan for upgrades and on a timely basis. And so it's a wonderful thing, and it often doesn't happen. But thank you for the support of that. And, of course, if I didn't already mention, did I, about the Wayne County Jail, that support for their millage renewal did pass, too. So we'll keep those bad guys in jail for a while longer, I guess. Okay, well, congratulations. I got to say, though, okay, November, less than November 6th is the big election date, Tuesday, November 6th, presidential election. Finally, you know, we've weeded out some candidates from the primary here. The big choices are on November 6th. Register to vote if you're not registered. It doesn't hurt. It only takes a couple pieces of ID showing your residency. Go to your city clerk's office in your local city hall or township office. It only takes a few minutes. And also, if you're renewing your driver's license, the Secretary of State's office will also give you voter registration for your city. They'll take your information, send it through, because they know your ID, because they're processing your ID. They will send that notification to the city. So if you're going to be, that's another way you can register. And don't think that, oh, I don't want to register because then the government will know where I am. They know where you are already.
Yeah,
believe me. They can find you. There's numerous databases, and no matter how careful you try to be, your name will come up, even if they have
your cell phone will give you away.
Yeah, or check your Amazon.com purchases or something. They'll find you, folks. That is just totally bogus. Oh, I don't want the government to know where I am. Or, hey, voting doesn't matter.
Or I don't want to get jury duty.
That's about the dumbest thing you can say.
And why? Voting does, why?
Because so many things affect what is done either locally or nationally or something. Even as a kid in school, one of my favorite subjects was civics. And a lot of teenagers didn't like that. How could you not be interested in the world around you? You know,
if you don't vote, you're part of the problem, not the solution. You know, if there is a solution, you're not helping. You say, well, let the other people vote and I'll just go along with whatever. Or, you know, that's totally bogus. You're right. Your vote makes a big difference. It's only one vote, but you add them all up and maybe be part of the 300 that helped Cynthia Cogren win. You know, out of 32,000 votes cast, she won by only 300. And so every vote was one of those 300 in a way that in her favor. Every vote in her favor was like the difference. They made that difference possible.
Absolutely.
And what about this one? And I'm challenging Kevin and Joe. This is a civics lesson here. What about the Democrats and Republicans? They're all alike. They're all corrupt. Kevin?
Do you want my opinion first?
Yeah, yeah. Just how do you take that? How do you respond to that? Is it true? Or?
I don't want to start a firestorm, but I kind of
am opinion.
Believing that. I mean, over the years, it seems like they're less and less different from one another. It seems like they're working for not we the people, but we the bankers.
Or for themselves, whatever that is,
that
you know, just to get reelected. I think the polarization the last 2 years, you know, that Republicans just will say no to any good idea if they think Obama might get benefit out of it.
Yeah,
that gridlock is a better campaign tactic to run on for their presidential candidate, who should go nameless right now, but you know who it is. And the Democrats don't have the votes. They don't have the majorities. Okay, they have a slight majority in the Senate, but they can't stop a filibuster, which means they can't do anything, even though they're in majority in the U.S. Congress Senate. And yes, they've both moved middle of the road. Certain Republicans seem to have gone a little more to the right, but a few Republicans have become more libertarian, which in fact has elements of progressive Democrat and conservative Republicans in it. So you can't say, and it's totally wrong. I've heard a couple of people this week say, oh, the libertarians, they're extreme right-wingers.
No,
absolutely
not.
No. Tea Party people are extreme right-wingers. Libertarians have a lot in common with conservative Republicans and Tea Partiers, even though that's such an ambiguous term.
They're kind of the best of all worlds.
Well, if you're a libertarian, you believe that, yes. So certainly one of the things we're going to try to do between now and the election, and you know, the Journal once a week, that's all we got, folks. I only have so many volunteers around here. We only get called back so often when we ask for interviews, but we're going to try to give some time to the major third parties. Like in the past, we've talked to both the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, candidates, local candidates for office, maybe even the national candidate for office if they're going to be on the ballot in Michigan. And we'll try to do that for you. But you should try to find out. And he said, well, it's not on Fox News. No, they don't cover it. It's not in New York Times. No, I read the Times, a paper that's supposed to cover definitively U.S. Where is anything about the Green Party or the Libertarian Party? Nowhere. You said, well, that means it's not important. Well,
yes,
it is if they're on the ballot and you could vote for them. And they do believe, and I'm sure if they had the power, of course, just getting a president is not having the power, as Obama knows. But, you know, they could make a real difference and you know, in one way or the other. But they could make a difference. And there's nothing I want to say from my civics lesson in high school where they said, oh, we're a two-party system, and if you have three or four parties, everything ends in chaos. Well, excuse me?
It isn't chaos.
Canada
right now
is not in chaos. England is not in chaos. France is not in chaos. You know, Italy is sort of in chaos, but Germany is not. And they all have more than two parties. Okay, that's totally, totally bogus. Often the third party can make the other two parties a little more responsive to the public.
Yeah, keep them all in line.
Yeah, a little more healthy competition. Even if it's only they're a minority party, if they are there, maybe they're just 10%, but they can be the difference on votes. And so the parties have to compromise to accommodate that third party, and that's good because it gets them off the dime. It prevents gridlock. You know, because through compromise, you can actually get something passed. And besides, you don't want that third party to have a platform of criticizing the other two more, you know. So it's extremely healthy, even if they don't get a majority, if they're there to help provide balance or perspective on the other issues. And personally, hey, if anybody can tell me that they don't support the Green Party platform, and you can read about it, it's 10 principles, and I won't go into it, but like, excuse me, clean air, clean water, health care for all, fair taxes for all. I mean, real, you know, I mean, fairness, honesty, transparency. Sure, no wars for no good purpose. I mean, very clear on these things. And they say, well, they can be clear because they're not in power. Okay, maybe that's true. You can be very, very honest and clear if you have no power to put anything in place. But because getting power is a little bit corrupting or compromising, if you will. But I do agree, Kevin, with your insights, and I think it can be clearly proven, and Ralph Nader would certainly be someone who has said this many times and proved it many, many times in the last, 15 years, that the Democratic parties and Republican parties, there's not much difference between them except this gridlock and, of course, the criticisms that the other people are evil back and forth.
Yeah.
But politically, in terms of platforms and the things that they will endorse, not much difference.
I don't think they're working for we the people.
Well, there you go. That's the opinions of the show, remember, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford.
But it's up to
College.
It's up to we the people to know what's going on and vote. Because
exactly.
If we the people can replace them if we're voting. But if you're just
yes.
If we're apathetic, then the crooks are going to have a run of the hen house.
Yes, exactly. You can make those choices. So we hope that you'll not just listen to the show, but read both Dearborn papers and take all that information and make sure you're registered, and then by golly, go vote. Now, you could vote as early as October 6th by absentee ballot, you know, or you can receive that absentee ballot and send it in within a couple days of the election, or at the last minute, you could go into the city clerk's office anytime after October, or even not at the last minute, you can go to the city clerk's office anytime after October 6th and fill out an absentee ballot. You can just say you're going to be out of town, Some people are kind of out of their mind most of the time, so that's like being out of town. So,
yeah. Permanent vacation.
You know, just say it. They're not going to check, and or you know, or you're not feeling well. You get a little sniffle, or maybe you do have a business appointment or something because you maybe actually have a real job. You know, that's going to constrict your chance to get to the polls. And so, fine, get an absentee ballot. Make sure you can do that. But also for November, help other people. Help the other people that you know who are registered. To get to the polling place, you know, or to get an absentee ballot. That would be very good civic deed, you know. Say, do you have a ride? Or when are you going to go? Or be a reminder for them. I try to do that. I don't know that many people, but I try to be helpful like that. I don't tell them how to vote. Take a ride with me. You got to vote for my candidate. No, of course not. But, you know, that's really important. I think a lot of the people that don't vote, it really is a practical reason. Is because of family commitments, time, got to watch my kid. You can take children with you,
mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
Doesn't take that to keep him in line. You know, I think I'd have a sort of like a daycare worker at every polling place if you needed one, you know. But you can even take him into the little polling booth. It's not much of a booth, a little area, you know, a little kiosk, yeah. But you can take them in there, and I think it's real good education for any child that's old enough to walk and talk that of that civic duty, that responsibility. You want a democracy? You got to work for it. And just the beginning is to vote in every election. Of course, it should be an intelligent vote, so that the beginning is to work for your candidates, to find out about the candidates all the way through. All that time between elections, too. So that's our usual civic plug here.
You make a good point, Jay, on the bringing your children, because I remember years ago when I was a new voter, and there was a couple of young people in the voting poll, and one clerk says to the other, you notice that the parents are good voters, the kids are good voters. Mm. And that's a great example to set.
Well, I remember when I was little going with my parents, I remember getting to pull the levers. That was mm-hmm. one of the – I wish they had those today. Because yeah. I missed that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a pause right now, and it's sort of sad. We do a Jim Hightower commentary, which is always important. You can always go to jimhightower.com and listen to them yourself. He's got really one every single day of the week that he puts out there, and they only are 2 minutes each. Or you could just read them on his website, jimhightower.com, and I think it's very challenging and worthy, although not necessarily completely local, but often I try to pick the commentaries that he does that do overlap into, common problem for this area, too. There's going to be a funeral, a memorial fund that's now set up for Johnny Bassett. I will say that the public visitation, Johnny Bassett is the great Detroit blues man who passed away last weekend. Today is Friday the 10th, from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m., at the PIE, that's PYE Funeral Home, there'll be visitation for his body, and that's in Detroit on 17,600 Plymouth Road. So 17,600 Plymouth Road, I don't know the cross street. Floral tributes will be accepted at the funeral home, so you could come with flowers, I guess, and condolence notes can be sent via PIE Funeral Home, that's PYEfuneralhome.com. The funeral for Johnny Bassett will start 11 a.m. tomorrow, Saturday, August 11th, at New St. Mark Church, Baptist, which is a Baptist church, 24,331 8 Mile Road in Detroit. It'll be preceded by a family hour, which, you know, outsiders cannot come in for that, at 10 a.m. So the funeral service will start at 11 a.m. Saturday at New St. Mark Baptist Church, 24,331 8 Mile in Detroit. The cemetery will be Detroit Memorial Park East. That's 13 Mile Road in Warren, in case you want to pay your respects sometime in the future. So he died August 4th, 2012. Born, by the way, October 9th, 1935. We do miss him greatly here at WHFR, not just our 14 hours of local blues every week, but he was a great friend, did a lot of special concerts for us. In fact, I have unreleased music of his from that concert from the year 2000. He gave us permission. I got the signed form, by the way, to play it on the air. But right now, from his latest album. I'd just like to take a moment of not silence, but a moment for his music. 3 minutes and 23 seconds, in fact. The lead song from Johnny Bassett, the album I Can Make That Happen on the Sly Dog Records label. You're on WHFR.FM. Johnny, I'm going to miss you greatly.
To music, you can't beat that Detroit sound. I'm proud to be from Detroit, town with a style all its own. If you're looking for a good time, check out the Red Wings down at the Joe. People talk about the future without thinking of the past. In an age of trends that pass, Detroit is built to last. I'm proud to be from Detroit. It's the message of the song. The words seem unfamiliar. Just clap your hands and groove along.
Johnny Bassett passed away last weekend, August 4th. And we're going to miss him very, very much here at WHFR. As I was trying to tell our blues DJ, Joanne, who should be here. She was on vacations last week. Should be back for her show at 2 o'clock today. Last Friday, while she was playing some Johnny Bassett, we knew he was seriously ill in the hospital at that point. Trying to cheer her up a little, I said, you know, it still is an amazing, positive legacy, all of his albums. I went to Amazon.com and there's actually only about four or five there. So there's a lot that are just not in print anymore, like our Uncut Detroit 1. While we have just a few copies, you can get our Uncut Detroit 1 from a direct digital download from CDBaby.com or from iTunes Music Store. So you can get the digital version of some of these, but not the original. But still, it's a tremendous heritage. And that last album, which I'll put on the playlist here, I guess, database, is I Can Make That Happen. It's Johnny Bassett, and Johnny is spelled J-O-H-N-N-I-E, Bassett, B-A-S-S-E-T-T. Sly Dog Records. Just a couple months ago it came out, and the song we heard was entitled Proud to Be from Detroit. And certainly he was very proud to be from Detroit. And 60 years of being a great, unique blues performer in Detroit. He wrote songs himself, as well as help from many other Detroiters, Bob Kodesh, Chris Kodesh, and others that wrote things that they knew Johnny would especially appreciate, and he did a real fine job of them. But a lot of people are mourning his loss, and as I said, there's a visitation today from 3 to 8 p.m. at the Pye Funeral Home, P-Y-E. And that is, again, Plymouth Road in Detroit. And the funeral service for the public will start at 11 a.m. tomorrow, Saturday, August 11th, at New St. Mark Baptist Church, 8 Mile Road in Detroit. Johnny, we do miss you. Okay, moving back to local news and views here on the Journal, other stories of the day. Just a Henry Ford Community College note, classes start here just a week from next Thursday. Boy, where did summer go? That's August 23rd. And in the paper, the Times-Herald, let me turn to it, a couple of financial aid deadlines. You know, it takes a while to process a request for financial aid. And what's included in those? Well, it's a chance to get government support. It's called work study, where the government will help you get a campus job by paying 80% of your minimum wage. And it's great to have a minimum wage job right here on campus. You go right from class and go right to your job and then go right home. Don't have to drive anywhere else or dress up too much differently. Of course, getting a loan, if you just want to get a loan that you think you can pay back later, you have to have this financial aid application processed, and scholarship help. A lot of people don't realize they might qualify for a scholarship until they apply. You know, I'll never get a scholarship, or, blah, blah, blah. You might find out there's some, American Indian scholarship, and you qualify as being an American Indian. You didn't even know that. Yep, well, we've got to hear you. Here's the commentary from Kevin and Joe. Kevin?
Yeah, they got scholarships for so many things out there. There's probably one if you're wearing purple underwear, I'd imagine.
Well, they're not all just for general. Some people that donate money for scholarships are special criteria that maybe you want to go into a special program, whether it's automotive technology or telecom or whatever. And it's just if you want to explore that and you're the only one. And that's not true with either of those two programs, but I'm just saying,
there's so many out there.
You're not competing against 10,000 others, for those, maybe two or three others or 10 or 12, but it's not another 10,000. So you don't have to be the best of 10,000. It's the best of two or three. And of course, there's multiple, but you got to have that application in. And the story here is that yesterday, unfortunately, August 9th, is the priority deadline to apply for financial aid. And it's a long, ugly story, but, with federal help and that, there's no guarantee, now that you've missed that, that you will not be deregistered during the application process. And they take people out who haven't paid their money and don't have a scholarship. They just drop all your classes out after you did enroll. You have to re-enroll as soon as that money becomes available. So you could lose your place in line, if you will, or not get classes at the right time. Sorry about that, but, when I went to college, planning, you had to plan at least a year ahead or at least 6 months at the very, very latest in order to meet these various deadlines. And I needed financial aid, and I was lucky enough to get a scholarship where I went, but you've got to plan ahead. So there's still things they can do. And sometimes, I think you know this, Kevin, is sometimes financial aid can kick in like in the middle of the semester. If you can just get the money together to enroll and be there, and then the financial aid or the job on campus can come through after you're already here, and that'll help you get out of the semester or break even somehow. So our Office of Financial Aid, you can try to call them. I'm sure they're overloaded, 313-845-9616. Email is finaid, sounds like a fish would like that, F-I-N-aid, A-I-D, F-I-N-A-I-D, at hfcc.edu. And probably that's a better way to respond and let them know your situation and the possibilities. But definitely, if you're going to come, you need to enroll. You need to register if you've never been here before. You need to go to the application process before you apply for financial aid, because they're not going to explore financial aid unless you're already admitted. Because if you can't be admitted, well, I don't know why you couldn't be. Most everybody could, even if you have some problems with high school graduation. There's some sort of tentative ways, I believe, that they can start you here anyway. So talk to them. HFCC.edu is the website. And today, Friday, everything is closed. Tomorrow, everything is closed. But next week, starting Friday, and I bet even Saturday next week, they're going to have people in the registration office, the so-called Welcome Center, just on the north side, closest to Ford Road and Evergreen here. Got a separate building facility for new students and current students who enroll, register, and financial aid. I think they move financial aid over there.
Yeah, oh yeah. The only thing that hasn't moved is payroll.
Okay. Well, and payroll, that's how you get the money after you get financial aid. Okay, that's not up there yet. But anyway, so please be encouraged to do that. And since it's only like less than 2 weeks away now to the start of the fall term, if you want to be here, and especially if you've already been here once, get right online and use the online registration system and get what classes and times are there. There's still openings for great schedules, but it's going to be another big semester, I predict. All right, moving on. That's our public service. Goodwill Store. Last Saturday at Homecoming, and we want to thank everybody that helped with the WHFR Homecoming booth, our own staff, but also all the people in the city of Dearborn and the Recreation Department. Imogene Woodyard, the head of the Dearborn Foundation, that now is actually in charge of Dearborn Homecoming. And wonderful woman, worked with her many years. She was formerly the head of the Dearborn Community Arts Council, which I don't think they have officially anymore. But very, very great experience for all of us. And we're so happy to meet so many of you who are listening now that came out there to visit our tent and buy some of our used CDs and our WHFR logo stuff and help keep us going here.
I'll just add to that. That was my first time actually being at Dearborn Homecoming. And wow, was I absolutely amazed at how great that event is. Mm-hmm. Totally swamps every other local city as far as how big it is and how good and well organized. Yeah. So yeah, major thumbs up for that.
Didn't seem to have any problem at all. And Joe, you were stuck here in the studio, and I say stuck here because a central part of our broadcast over the air is to be here in order to patch them through. And did you get out there?
I did get out there Friday night.
Okay, and, I had already gone home probably.
Yeah,
that
but
time.
It was, and then later after we closed up, then I went and saw Thornetta Davis.
And that was, I'm sure, great. Yeah. There's another great blues diva, a local blues artist who's right up there with Johnny Bassett. Let's see, Alberta Adams, Thornetta Davis, Johnny Bassett. At least they were the top three in my book in Detroit, and of course we're one less now. But okay, so we had a great time, and thanks to all of you for supporting us out there. And if we didn't see you out there, just keep listening then. Hemlock Pool Tax District vote rejected. From the Dearborn Press and Guide this last Wednesday, it was a big margin, apparently. Now, there was, Kevin, why don't you give us the numbers? In that district, there was, almost 2,000 households?
Yeah, there was 1,936 ballots sent out. When I talked to Gary Ivanko a couple weeks ago, I must have grossly misunderstood him, because I reported here that there was 1,100 replies, and out of that, 90% were in favor. Well, when the story came out, we got the email on Sunday while we were at homecoming that wasn't the case. So this morning I called Gary to find out what had happened, and he doesn't realize or doesn't know where those numbers came in. But what I suspect may have happened was there was a spot on there, because I have 3 pages of notes when I was talking to him, and he was hypothesizing about certain scenarios, and I maybe misunderstood something he said. So anyways, that wasn't the case.
Well, that's very generous of you. But 1900... you have to understand that even elected officials often misspeak.
Yeah. So 1,936 ballots sent out. 486 were the number that was sent back. So that's 23.2%. Out of that, 369 said no, or about 75%. 117 said yes, or about 25%. So the vote failed, or the SAD failed by a 3-1 vote.
Oh, we're sad about that.
Sad, yeah. Sad.
Bad
Boo-hoo.
Pun.
Boo-hoo.
So they won't get their own pool, but then again, those all the people, households in that area, are not going to have to pay the, we estimated the average of $60 to $75 a year for pool maintenance, upgrades, and so on. Right now, their pool is closed, so they don't have one now. But of course, and of course, a lot of the people, like the people in the paper, I'll just sum this up, but the people were interviewed at the Dearborn Press and Guide, who were the coordinators of that petition drive, they said they can't believe it. They got great support for the petition when they were going door to door. But they feel, well, finally when the vote came in the mail and they looked at the numbers, we just can't afford it. Yeah. Probably reality set in. You know, the excitement of publicly saying, yes, we'd love to have a pool, but then the reality of having to pay for it. Yeah,
And then all the other taxes that are...
What was the percent return then? Is it 1 in 4? Or one-third? 25% or one?
It was less than 25%. It was 23.2%.
Okay. And I can't believe the ballot comes in the mail.
Yeah. All you
this
do
is an extra $60 to $70 a year or a pool. So you, either way, you'd want to send it back and vote. How could all those people not send it back? Okay. If they don't send it back, then they're supporting whatever the majority is, either for it or against it. But don't they have an opinion? Either about the extra money or about the pool? I mean, they don't have an opinion on either one of those issues? I can't believe that people...
can't think for themselves?
Well, I mean, we're sending them the ballot. Some people say, well, all elections should be, you know, the ballot should be sent out so that everybody gets a ballot to send back. And of course, some people are like, well, there would be terrible voter fraud. Well, there's no voter fraud with absentee ballots now. Oh, yeah, there could be, but there's no evidence of voter fraud with absentee ballots of any large extent. I think they said in the whole U.S. they only have 5 cases of voter fraud. That is 5 votes in the whole U.S. So there's no voter fraud now. But yes, absentee ballots, you know, you don't know who actually filled them out. You don't know who opened the envelope that came to the house or filled them out and sent them back. So of course there's a chance of somebody else filling it out for you. But to have 2/3 or 3/4 not even come back, what's going on with those people at Hemlock? I just think that we get a lot of junk mail these days, and they just thought, oh, it's another ad or something.
Yeah. Well, that kind of follows the same percentages for who turned out at the actual
at the primary.
Primaries. Yeah.
I know, but you would just think if it came in the mail, you know,
you would
tend to have higher return rates.
Yeah.
Did they have to put their own stamp on the envelope?
No, that it was selfish.
Did the envelope coming to them and say, important local millage ballot, you know, could affect your taxes each? I mean, there should have been big, bold letters on the envelope so you don't just say, it says City of Dearborn or something, you know, and they just toss it aside as an ad.
Well, even if you had the big letters, I mean, all the political ads you're getting, they probably, you know.
Right. You don't know. Yeah, but
well, I know it was sent first-class mail, so.
So the final thing is, and we said this last week, too, is that the Save Our Pools group, various activists that are under that heading, they were planning for next year a petition drive citywide to get it on a ballot maybe a year from November. I don't know when exactly. If citywide we supported a lot of pools, I don't know, it would be all the pools, Open Hemlock and the other one that's closed now, or just the ones that are still open, but it would only cost the average person in Dearborn $20. And then everybody in the family would get pool passes at any pool in Dearborn for as long as they're open. And so they think that'll pass more easily because it's less cost per household. And maybe the Hemlock people were so well educated, they said, oh, look, next year we might be able to vote on this one, and it's only going to cost us $20.
Yeah, instead of 60 to 70.
So, yeah, so that makes sense. So maybe it was just maybe a lot of them knew who voted no that there's going to be one next year, and they said, well, we'd rather support that. It's a lot less cost.
Makes more sense.
Yeah, because it's only $40, but still. How many lattes is that? 10 lattes?
10, give or take.
Okay. Joe, this is real breaking issue with about 7 minutes to go. In the Press and Guide from Wednesday, Dearborn's main library fountain fix would cost $1.4 million. What's the story there?
Well, the library commission was looking at the cost. The estimate to replace it altogether would be $1.5 million. They looked at three options. It would cost, the estimate is $1.4 million for the to replace it. The city's cash shop. Now they could get the full fountain working at a cost of $650,000, only getting the upper tier functional for about $450,000, or removing the whole thing for $100,000. Of course, the ultimate decision is up to the city council, but the commission would recommend
Right. It finally has to come from the commission.
Right.
The city council has to make a decision. What was the recommendation of the...
What they did is they said they were hesitant to vote on a recommendation to send to the council, but the letter saying commissioners favored completely restoring or removing the fountain. So the middle option of a kind of halfway, they didn't seem to like that. But
either it's a million and a half or nothing.
Yeah.
How many lattes would that buy?
Yeah. Well... It boggles the mind. We've done this story several times since it came up, but the reason the story came up again, folks, is because these are the official estimates from a company that specializes in, I don't know, upgrading or repairing fountains, public fountains. And the motor drive alone, which is why it hasn't spritzed up in the air for the last year, and then there's lights. And when it was in full tier, there was even a computer that controlled, you know, more spray, less spray. And the head of rec department said it's a very old computer, because like 10, 15 years ago, that has to be replaced if they had to reprogram it for the lights at different times flashing and the water tiers on and off, you know. And
he said there's a little mini Bellagio.
He said now there's a mouse in there. So I don't know. Is that the computer mouse or no? I don't. Of course, I don't think any of us here can see the reality. Are we all Dearborn residents? Kevin, you're close.
No, I'm close.
Yeah, but anyway, you know, $1.5 million when Dearborn is trying to keep the budget just for a fountain? No. When it originally was put in, again, it was a grant of about a couple hundred thousand, and the idea to that family that donated it and dedicated it was that that money would be good enough to keep it going forever, sort of like an eternal flame, but water spraying out instead and lights flashing. Just in the first couple of years, they ran out of the money. There was, you know, they didn't set up a revolving fund or a, you know, investment. Of course, even investments wouldn't have worked well after 2008. But unbelievably expensive to keep that going, much less keep it replacing it now. So, you know, what's amazing to me is you have a library commission. We interviewed Mr. Polterak a couple weeks ago in early June when we were at the Dearborn Farmers Market with a live broadcast, and he's the head, or at least he's a member of the commission. He's quoted there. But excuse me, I know these are just average citizens, but they couldn't decide what to recommend to the city council?
Hold on, let me get this
straight. They were split. They, in their letter, they recommended either doing, and it's kind of a recommendation, they had nothing in between, either do the whole $1.5 million or do nothing, which means turn into a garden, or they could still be a plaque for the guy that donated the money for the fountain. I mean, they could still have the dedication plaque there. But they said that just to tear it down, to take it out, is going to cost $100,000.
So the just to tear it down would cost half as much as it cost to build it back when they built it.
Right. Yeah. 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 Because they want to, you know, they want to take it. Maybe it's taking it out and putting in grass too. Maybe the $100,000 includes
or
a plaque. That maybe, I don't know, but they just said
that was 40 or 50 years ago when that was built.
No. I think it was late '90s when it was put in. Is there a date on
there?
When did the fountain first go in? Can you find that in the story and wave at me?
I think it was 60, late 60s.
Okay. Okay. Well, he's going to take a look. Maybe it's been there a long time. I guess maybe it has. But so we'll give you. But you know, come on. Library Commission, let's get, you know, strength of character here. Let's take a vote. Let the majority rule.
Yeah, fountain was built in 1969.
Okay, so that's quite a few years.
Yeah, so inflation.
What kind of computers did they have in 69? No wonder.
All they had was big supercomputers, vacuum tubes.
So I thought maybe we were talking about a mouse running on a treadmill or something to keep it going, but when you talked about the mouse and where the computer is supposed to be. So I don't think the city council is in any way going to go for $1.5 million. So that's not going to happen, folks. But come on, library commission, can't you send a single recommendation? Can't you? Or is that too big a deal to actually come to a consensus or a majority rule? Seems a little lack. Of course, they don't have the power to say anyway. I mean, it's just a recommendation. Getting back to a brief moment, only about 3 minutes to go on the new WHFR Journal, and we hope to start Highway 61 as soon as Joanne arrives in the studio today in a few minutes. But the of course, the Planning Commission, we talked about this last week, did not reappoint Syed Deep to it because of just one vote. Ted Tefelsky, the president of the Dearborn City Council, voting no. He just thought that, as Mayor O'Reilly had said before the meeting to Mr. Deep, you shouldn't have blogged about the proceedings of the Planning Committee. This is in regard to the Goodwill store, which was finally approved by the Planning Committee. Went on for 3-4 months, the discussions. And said Deep does have a blog. Yes, you know, Deep said what? Sort of a pun on his name backwards. And you can always read his opinions there. He always has very responsible opinions, and he expresses himself very objectively and clearly. So it's not a lot, you know, throwing a lot of dirt or half-baked ideas around. Very responsible guy. You know, and thinking about it, I thought, well, initially I thought, well, maybe he shouldn't have done that. You know, and Tefelsky said, well, you didn't vote for him because he did that blog while these proceedings were going on. And today it dawned on me, what was wrong with that? This is not, it wasn't a jury on a court case where you can't discuss things outside of the jury meetings. This is not a closed-door session when you have to hire someone, you know, or interview someone.
He just gave his opinion,
right? He gave his opinion. The planning commissions are open to the public, aren't they? I mean, you have to find out when they meet, which is a problem right there, but I believe they're open to anybody.
They should be open-door meetings.
Like a reporter or whatever, certainly, and it's open-door meetings. I assume they have minutes, maybe they don't, but it's open-door. So why couldn't he blog about it? I don't understand. You know, he expressed, because there was community concern that Goodwill wasn't going to be approved, he expressed why he voted against, because he probably sensed that a lot of people in the community didn't agree with him. And so he expressed his opinion why he was against it. And I read that. It was even in the Dearborn Press and Guide. Talk about a blog. He had an editorial, an essay in one of the Press and Guides about that time. And we presented it here in the Journal earlier in the year. And I think that's his public right, even as a Planning Commission member. He didn't, say personalities. Oh, like Fred on the commission, he's always drunk, or Joe never shows up, and there is no Fred or Joe, I don't think. But you know, he didn't throw dirt around. He just said, these are my opinions and why I voted no, and I didn't agree with him at the time, and I still don't. And I'm happy to say that the store will open September 8th.
Yay.
Okay, fully open their doors September 8th, and I talked to the manager at the homecoming at during the Green Living Alternatives little mini event last Saturday, and just so excited. My daughter's got it on her schedule. She's going to be there. I mean, just, you know, everybody, it's just a great store, okay? Yes, lower price goods, but free parking, too, at that shopping center in West Dearborn. And the new location of Dearborn Music will be right next door. I'm not sure. They won't be open, I don't think, September 8th, but very soon, within another month or two after that, they'll be in that same location or right next to them. So good for them. But So Morris Goodman, he goes on and on, long op-ed here, and you should read it from Press and Guide last Sunday. If you want to see what he said, how we should act, you know, next year, Ted.